On a ledge above the hills and desert plains, Falcon watched through his binoculars as Naiche got on his horse, holding a knife with a snake's head on it, and led his people out onto the desert floor. He took particular note of the three warriors left behind as a rear guard.
Time to sow some more seeds of fear.
Falcon crawled backward from the edge of the ledge he was lying on. He pulled his Winchester from its saddle boot and eased over the hilltop. He took his time, making no noise, until he was a couple of hundred yards from the Braves. He stepped to a pinyon tree and braced his rifle barrel against a small branch stub sticking out. Falcon watched the three men in the distance fall from their ponies. Only one was still alive by the time Falcon scrambled down the remaining 100 yards of hillside. Falcon stood over the Indian. A look of terror came over the Brave's face. He pulled his knife and slashed it across his own throat. Falcon had convinced them he was some kind of monster worth committing suicide over. He spent some time working on the dead bodies, then rounded up their ponies, tied the Braves to the bronc's backs, and sent them out into the desert in the direction Naiche and his band had taken. Falcon hoped he could be there to see their faces when their rear guard showed up butchered like the others. He gathered up as much dry timber and dead branches as he could, built a large pile in the center of the trail. He took a cigar out of his pocket, struck a lucifer on his pants leg, lit the cigar, then threw the match in the dry leaves. Within minutes, he had a roaring bonfire going, sending dark columns of cloudy smoke into the sky. He looked back up the mountain. He hoped the army had shown up, and that Hawks and Meeks would recognize his smoke as a signal to come. Once the fire was going well, he climbed back up the mountainside to Diablo. He decided he had time for a short nap, since he figured to be busy later that night. He took Diablo's saddle off, put his ground tarp on a bed of pine needles, and laid back for a siesta. Falcon relived in his mind his hatred for renegade Indians and all that it cost him. Falcon judged people by their actions, not their skin. Indians who were peaceable and obeyed the law had nothing to fear from him. It was the ones who flaunted the law, who declared war on the white man, that he hated with all his heart. The Indians had no honor about war. They killed women and children and civilians as well as soldiers, and they did it in the most brutal manner imaginable. For that reason, he would not rest until Naiche and his followers were captured or in their graves.
Damn it, Free! When are we going up in those mountains after Naiche? You've had us out here in the desert for 2 days doing nothing but riding in circles.
The scout looked up from where he squatted on his haunches, looking for tracks and signs only he could see in the hard-packed desert sand. He was a short man, and with his white, glossy gaucho and his long, shaggy hair, he could have been anywhere from 20 to 50 years old. One thing was certain. The man had a lot of miles on him. He looked like he'd been rode hard and put away wet.
Captain Jones, I'd think after your last couple of ventures up against Naiche, you'd be a mite more careful about rushing into places you ain't sure of.
Jones knew he wasn't the most popular commander since he'd lost almost his entire detail, but he didn't appreciate a lowlife like Mickey Free impugning his abilities in front of his men. Free had a terrible reputation. And the only reason he got away with his insubordination was there wasn't a better tracker in the whole U.S. Army. Unlike other scouts who dropped back when fighting began, Free was always in the forefront, a maniacal grin on his ugly face as he drew down on and killed Indians.
Just what do you mean by that remark, Free?
Take it any way you like, Captain. But as long as I'm scouting for this here soiree, we'll be going about it my way. You understand, Captain? Because if that's not all right, I'll just shag my butt on back to the fort and let you carry on in your usual manner.
Jones clamped his teeth shut, trying his best to resist a sudden urge to pull his revolver and shoot this smart-talking son of a bitch in the face. His resolve to do nothing was bolstered by Mickey's reputation as a cold-blooded killer, Jones had a feeling that if he did go for his gun, he'd be dead before he could clear leather.
Captain Jones, sir! I got a message for you from the telegraph at the fort.
Jones took the telegram and unfolded it, squinting a little to make out the writing. He didn't intend to give Free any more ammunition to use against him by putting on his reading spectacles.
It says here, Mr. Free, that a group of cowboys up in the Dragoons have found out where Naiche is hiding his main force. They say if we meet them up under Indian Head Peak at noon today, they'll lead us right to him.
Uh-huh.
What's the matter, Mr. Free?
I don't believe any cowboys could have just stumbled upon Naiche's camp and been allowed to ride away to summon us to them. Naiche ain't that careless or that stupid. Does that telegram say who it is we're dealing with?
It does mention a name here. Falcon McAllister. Do you know him?
Know him? Nay. But I knew his pa. Hell of a man.
So, you think we could trust this McAllister to lead us to Naiche?
If he's anything like his father, I'd follow him through the gates of hell. Let's make dust, Captain. We're burning daylight.
Hawk and Meeks were sitting next to a small fire they'd built under the overhang of a rock to hide the smoke. Hawk paused with his coffee cup halfway to his mouth and cocked his head.
Horses!
He jumped to his feet and pulled out his Winchester.
Is it engines? Hell no, it's a goddamn cavalry come to rescue us from the Redskins.
That'll be the day.
It wasn't long before Captain Jones and his men rode into the clearing under the outcropping of rock that resembled an Indian chief's head.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Howdy, Colonel.
It's Captain, not Colonel.
Which of you two is McAllister?
Neither one of us is. He went on ahead to keep an eye on Naiche and make sure he didn't move his camp. Would you be Mickey Free?
Yep.
Free was used to being recognized. After all, there weren't all that many men around who fit his description.
I didn't know you was in the area. Last I heard, you was dogging Cochise's trail.
Nope. That business is all finished now.
Just who are you men?
I'm John Henry Hawkins, but mostly I go by Hawk. This is Jasper Meeks.
You're the same Meeks who tried to take that wagon train through Indian country?
Yeah, but it weren't my idea to go that way. The wagon master overruled my advice, and they paid the price for ignoring what I had to say.
What are you men doing up here during an Indian war?
We had business up here. Them murdering Redskins killed my kin, butchered them like they was nothing. I aim to kill a few Indians for every one of my kin they slaughtered.
What about you, Mr. Meeks?
As you know, I suddenly found myself out of a job, and I had nothing better to do. So I decided to mosey around up here in the Dragoons for a spell.
You after revenge, too?
Well, if any Indians happen to cross my path, I don't intend to turn the other cheek after what they did to my wagon train.
Don't you men know it's the Army's place to get the Indians back on the reservation?
Yeah, Captain, and we can all see you doing a damn good job of it, too.
From what we heard in Tombstone the other day, all you bluebellies have managed to do so far is give the Indians a bunch of repeating rifles and some targets to shoot at.
Word is, casualties are running about 50-1 against you. At that rate, there'll only be one or two soldiers left when you finally kill all the Redskins.
You'd be wise to curb your tongues, gentlemen, and show us where Naiche's camp is.
Are you planning on just riding up the trail and attacking his people? I think it'd be a mite smarter to send your scout up there with me and Meeks and let us take care of the sentries first. Otherwise, by the time you get to them, they'll be all dug in and you'll have a hell of a time rooting them out.
He's right, Captain. I'll head on up to the camp with these two and scout out the lay of the land. After we've killed the guards, we'll come back and get you.
Private, tell the men to dismount. We'll prepare lunch here while Mr. Free scouts on ahead.
As the three men rode up the trail, Hawk looked at Free.
Mickey, tell the truth. How do you stand working for idiots like that captain back there?
Well, I'll tell you, my friend. It ain't always easy. But it's the surest way I know to kill me some Apaches. And as long as there's even one of those bastards walking around free, I'll be volunteering to get his scalp.
We better walk the rest of the way. It's only another mile or so.
The three men separated and spent an hour painstakingly creeping up on the ledge overlooking Deer Spring Canyon. Finally, after discovering there were no sentries stationed around the canyon, they met up on the precipice.
Damn, looks like they've flown the coop.
Down in the valley, cooking fires were still smoldering, lazy trails of smoke spiraling skyward.
Well, I guess if it comes to it, I can go down there and track the sons of bitches to wherever they've gone.
Hold on a minute.
Hawk and Mickey turned and glanced at the trailsman. He was facing away from them toward the southernmost part of the mountains.
Look down there.
I was wondering where Falcon was. It'd be my guess that's a signal from him that the engines have taken out across the desert. Leave it to Falcon to send the army smoke signals telling them where to find engines.
Falcon awoke with a start, covered with sweat that was fast becoming frigid as the late afternoon temperature dropped. Stepping over to Diablo, he poured some water from his canteen onto his bandana and wiped his face, trying to come fully awake. He glanced at the sun lying low on the horizon and realized he'd slept longer than he wanted to. Naiche and his band of renegades now had a good 4 hours start on him.
Time to shag our tails, Diablo. I can't believe you let me sleep so long, fella.
Falcon could barely make out the tracks in the coarse desert sand and the failing sunlight. And occasionally, he had to get down off Diablo and cast around in a semicircle until he picked up the trail again. If the three dead men had been found by Naiche, he would know someone was close on his back trail, and he might well send a small war party back to remove the threat. Falcon needed all his wits about him to survive this trek across the desert. He and Hawk and the others had been lucky so far going up against the Apache without suffering any casualties. Now that he was alone, he had to be doubly careful not to make any mistakes, because it only took one to cost a man his scalp. Meanwhile, Cal Franklin was traveling fast as he left the Dragoons behind him, angling southwest toward Tombstone with his sacks of gold dust hidden in his saddlebags. He wanted no more the three-man war between Falcon, Hawk, and Jasper pitted against bloodthirsty Apaches. He still recalled vividly what he'd seen from his hiding place in the cave, close to the cabin where he and Billy and Johnny and Frank headquartered while digging riches out of Arizona Territory rock. The slaughter he'd witnessed when his partners died still lingered in his memory, and he felt sure it would keep him awake at night for years to come. He didn't want to remember it any longer, yet it continued to creep into his slumber. Some might call him a coward for what he did, lying there in the darkness while his partners were being slaughtered. Cal was alive. In his own mind, he knew he'd done the right thing, the only thing he could have done. He pushed the incident from his thoughts, intent on getting away from the Indians as rapidly as he could. He hadn't cared what Falcon or Hawk or Jasper thought about him for pulling out when he did. After so many years of failure and frustration seeking the motherlode, after finally finding enough gold to make him a rich man for the rest of his days, it was senseless for him to stay involved in what McAllister and the others were doing, tracking down and killing a few Apaches at a time.
I ain't no Indian killer, goddammit. I dig holes in the rocks and look for gold.
Crossing desert flats, pushing his mount even though water for his horse would be scarce until he reached Tombstone, Cal rode into a shallow, winding arroyo to do as much as he could to keep from being seen. Following the arroyo, he felt safer being off the skyline in what was mostly flat country. Falcon had said the Apaches' tracks were headed this way, and he believed they were making a run for Mexico, but Tombstone and safety for Cal Franklin lay in almost the same direction the Indians were taking. He figured it was worth the risk to get as far away from McAllister, Hawk, and the soldiers led by Mickey Free as he could. His footsore horse had begun to tire. Cal slowed the gelding to a walk to give it a moment's rest. Suddenly, two mounted Apache warriors swung their horses along the rim of the arroyo above him, both aiming Winchester rifles down at him with hatred slitting their coal black eyes.
Stop! Drop guns!
Sweet Jesus.
Cal thought about the sacks of gold dust and what his life was worth. He jerked his horse to a halt, then held both palms in the air to show they were empty.
Drop guns!
Moving carefully, very slowly, He took out his pistol with a thumb and forefinger and dropped it in the sand beneath his horse. Then he pulled his rifle from its boot in the same slow fashion and tossed it down. One Indian sent his horse down the slope and bank of the sandy ravine and stuck the barrel of his rifle against Cal's rib cage, jabbing him with plenty of force.
Ride, we sure way.
Cal picked up his reins and turned his horse to the south, the direction both Indians were pointing. The Indian behind him jumped off his horse to retrieve Cal's weapons, then quickly remounted.
Ride!
Resigned to his fate, not knowing what he could do to stop the pair of Apaches from killing him and taking the winter's work from his saddlebags. Cal rode out of the arroyo, heading due south toward the distant Pedregosa Range. His saddlebags filled with riches, Cal rode toward his destiny, sure in the knowledge he would not live to spend a cent of it.
Ride faster!
Cal's mount obliged the Indian with a long trot, limping slightly on his left forefoot. The Apaches appeared to be in something of a hurry. Cal wondered if they knew the soldiers were close, or if Falcon, Hawk, and Jasper might have been seen along the Indian's back trail. Something deep inside Cal whispered that he would not live long enough to see the mountains where he'd once prospected for gold. He glanced around at all manner of desert plants scattered across sand and rock wasteland. It was foolish, he knew, to worry about the scenery where he would be tortured and killed by these Apaches. But it didn't matter if the last thing he saw was a cactus or a mesquite tree. He'd been counting on seeing the insides of several saloons and tombstones, like the Oriental maybe, and others, and to spend some of his gold dust. But Cal Franklin wasn't going to make it. This was the end of the line. The warrior riding out in front made a sudden turn toward a distant thicket of Ocotillo, where a ravine made a sharp bend to the west.
That's where they're taking me. That's where I'm going to die.
The Indian behind him, with a rifle aimed at his spine, rode closer to him now. Cal wasn't thinking about what would happen next, because he was resigned to it. He allowed himself to dream about what it would have been like to spend the gold in his saddlebags. They neared the Ocotillo Grove, and he saw shadows behind the stalks, shadows of men and horses. The call of an owl came from the brush. The warrior riding in front cupped his hands over his mouth. Cal's horse was now so lame it had difficulty in the deeper sand pits, struggling to free its sore leg. He gave little thought to the animal carrying. More than anything in his life, he just wanted to see the saloons of Tombstone again.
Stop here! Get off horse!
Cal obeyed the order, swinging down from the saddle on legs that trembled when they held his weight. From the Ocotillas, half a dozen Indians emerged from the brush, cradling rifles. One of them pointed at him, and he was surprised to find that the Apache was a woman, even though she carried a rifle and a pistol and a knife. Soon, hidden in a sandy basin surrounded by spiny Ocotillo stalks as the desert sunset emblazoned western skies, Chicole was looking down at their white prisoner. She pointed to Cal, now bound and gagged, lying at the bottom of the sand pit.
He is one of them. I saw this one from far away, but he was with the two men in buckskins who killed our warriors. He wears different white man's clothing, but I am certain who he is. Let me kill him myself, Chief Naiche, for what they have done to our Apache brothers.
Naiche glared down at the sweating white man, his eyeballs bulging, about to burst from their sockets. He turned to Nana, one among his warriors who was old enough to have learned the most English.
Ask him who the others are, Nana. Tell him we will kill him unless he speaks true words.
Nana sauntered over on his badly bowed legs, strands of gray catching late sunlight in his shoulder-length hair bound to his head by a cloth band. Before he asked the prisoner any questions, he took out his knife, showing the white man its gleaming, razor-sharp blade. The white eye struggled to free himself of his rawhide bindings, the bloody soldier's neckerchief tied over his mouth.
You speak truth to me, white man, or I cut off your eyelids and tie you across a bed of red ants with your guts scattered like ropes around you.
The prisoner nodded quickly. Nana bent down, and with the tip of his knife, he cut the cloth away from the white man's mouth.
Who are these white men who follow us?
One is named Falcon, Falcon McAllister.
Is he the silent one who wears deerskins and makes no sound with his feet?
Yeah, he's the tall one who rides a black horse and has blonde hair and blue eyes. He's an engine fighter or something like that. He's up from Colorado Territory.
Where is this place called Colorado Territory?
Up north, where it gets real cold in the wintertime. I ain't rightly sure why he left there. He never did give us no reason.
Why does he follow us?
Some Indians killed his wife a long time ago. He ain't never forgot it. They cut her up real bad and left her for dead, and he swore a blood oath on all renegade Indians.
Was it Apaches?
He never said. No, I don't think so.
As the white man hesitated, his eyes shifted and blinked rapidly several times. Nana, with the wisdom brought by many winters of life among the white eyes, knew the man was lying.
Look, I never was part of all that killing. It's them three others who done it to your braves.
Who are the others?
Nana drew his knife gently across the bound white man's neck, just enough to draw a trickle of blood.
Oh, God. One's called Hawk. He's an old army scout, I think, and the other one is a fella by the name of Jasper Meeks. He's a scout for wagon trains headed west. He's got real long white hair.
I saw this wagon scout with the silver hair. His horse got away and he caught it. Then he took off and left the white people with the wagons to die. He is a coward.
Where are the other three men?
Following your tracks. Only McAllister has some new idea about what he's going to do when he gets real close to you. He said he was going to kill all of you.
A new idea?
Yeah, he's going to leave the other two fellows someplace and come after you alone. That's what he said.
You lie! No warrior, not even a white warrior, would be so foolish. It is a trick what this man tells us. Do not believe him.
I have seen this tall white eyes with hair the color of wheat who rides the black horse. He killed without making a noise. He has been taught to hide on the face of Earth Mother like an Apache. My spirit voice spoke to me in a dream, saying this white man will be very hard to kill.
Are you afraid of this white man, Ja?
I am only telling you what my spirit voice whispered to me in my dream. I am not afraid of him or of the others.
Jacole turned back to the white prisoner.
We kill this one slowly and leave him for the tall one to find. I will kill him in the old way.
Naiche knew it would be good for the others who followed him to see a white man tortured to death, proving to those who had doubts that Apache medicine was stronger than that of any white man. He gave Chicoli a nod of approval.
Kill him. Stake him out over the ants without his eyelids, so that his eyeballs will boil in tomorrow's sun. Cut his entrails from his body in the old ceremonial way, and scalp him. But leave him alive, so this tall one who calls himself a bird will hear his screams across the desert. It will be a message to him and his friends that we want war with him, that we are ready to fight him.
I will enjoy cutting him. Hear his cries, my people. And know that this is only the beginning of our war with the whites who have taken our land from us.
Naiche wouldn't allow a fire, not even a small one, to take the chill out of the gloaming air. Chicole fashioned wooden stakes from thick akatia stems and cut points in them to be driven into the ground. Strips of rawhide soaked in a clay bowl of water not far away. Judd had found a red ant bed south of the akatia thicket, where he placed the unconscious white man, still bound hand and foot. The ants would come from their mounds at sunrise, drawn to the smell of blood to feed.
Tie him across the ant bed. We have been here in one spot too long.
Chicole carried her stakes and the bowl of rawhide strips to the ant bed. 34 warriors and women followed her to see the ritual. 5 scouts had been sent out into the darkened desert on foot to watch for the other white men or the soldiers. All the Apaches knew what would happen the moment the white man began screaming. Anyone within hearing distance would be drawn to the sound, and they must be ready to hurry south toward the relative safety of the Pedregosas. Chicole walked up to the white eyes, a strange gleam in her eyes. She put down her stakes and rawhide, then she drew her knife.
You die for the lives of the Chiricahua people you sent to the Land of Shadows!
Kneeling beside his head, she seized the front of his hair in her left hand. She left him there with blood pouring from a bare spot in the skull, his bloody scalp lock tucked into her belt. She took up the Akatia stakes and hammered him into the ground with a heavy stone. Jub began cutting the man's wrists free, only to tie him again with longer strips of rawhide to fasten to the stakes. They were wet strips of rawhide that would contract as they dried in Tamara's sun, pulling their victim's shoulders and elbows and hips apart at the joints. But that pain would seem like nothing compared to having his abdomen cut open. Then loops of his intestines jerked roughly from his body cavity to have him tossed all around him. Removing the eyelids was a new touch for the Apache, a form of torture learned from their lifelong enemies to the east, the Comanches.
Please! Please! Have pity on me!
Chicole grew a genuine smile when she heard him call out for mercy. She went about the rest of her preparations quickly, saving the trimming of his eyelids for last. All around her, the other Apaches, mostly the women, were preparing to move again, to run south as fast as they could travel until they reached the safe haven Naiche had promised them in Mexico. When the prisoner was staked across the sleeping ant bed, Chicole drove the tip of her knife into the white man's belly. She scooped out a fistful of sticky intestinal loops. They faintly resembled purple snakes as they slithered from her hand to land on the ground, where they were coated with a layer of caliche dust and sand. Chicole turned her head to the last blood-red rays of the setting sun.
It is good. When these white enemies come, they will quake at our mercilessness.
Naiche had his doubts, for he secretly feared the spirit dream described by Nana. Would this one white man be so difficult to kill? He looked back along the way they had come. Was this silent killer even now on their trail, following them so he could kill them one by one as he had been doing for the past several days?
It's time to go. We have waited here too long.
Naiche swung onto his bay and signaled the rest of his band to move southward. Heavily laden pack horses led by the women and 22 warriors prepared to ride out onto the desert and travel all night to get to the far mountains in safety. Chicole mounted her pinto and rode up beside Naiche. She pointed down at the dying white man staked out over the ant bed.
The dead white man will be a message to the other whites who follow our tracks. When they find him, they will know he is a warning.
Ja overheard their conversation and gave the northern desert a passing glance.
The tall one will come.
Naiche wondered how Ja could be so certain of it. Had his spirit voice foretold the future? Suddenly, one of the five men who had been sent to watch their back trail came galloping over a small hillock.
Horses caught. Three riders are coming.
Naiche whirled his bay around to face the young warrior.
From which direction?
The man pointed back the way they had come, toward the north.
Only three riders?
Yes.
I told you the white man lied when he said the tall one was leaving the other two behind and coming by himself.
Naiche nodded, his eyes searching the horizon, watching three small dots appear and then get slowly larger in the quickly darkening sky. His heart thuddered in his chest and his stomach roiled. At last, he was to come face to face with this man who had killed so many of his followers.
Let me lead a small war party out to meet them. The tall one's tricks will be of no use on the desert flats. Even Apaches cannot disappear when there is no place to hide. Let us see if he is truly flesh and blood, or spirit walker.
Naiche looked at John and Nana to see what they would advise.
It cannot be the tall one.
And why not, old one?
It's not his way. He would not be so easily seen. His way is to walk in shadows, to steal silently through the night on feet that make no sound, to kill without being seen. I know this from my visions.
Chicole turned her gaze to Naiche. She didn't dare say anything against the old one aloud, for the Apache revered the ancients. But she allowed Naiche to see her disagreement.
Take 10 warriors with you, and ride out to meet the 3 who follow us. Chakotay, do not return unless you have killed the White Eyes!
Chakotay's teeth flashed in a savage grin, and she jerked her pony's head around. Holding her Winchester above her head, she quickly pointed out 10 warriors to follow her. After a while, when there was no sound of gunfire, Naiche rode to the top of a small hillock and peered into the distance. He could barely make out the war party returning in the darkness, leading the 3 horses and their riders back toward the tribe. As it got closer, his mouth became dry, and he felt a cold feeling in the pit of his stomach.
Nana, keep the others here. Do not let them see what Chakotay has found.
He rode out to meet the returning war party. As he got nearer, the images on the horses became clearer. It was the 3 warriors he'd left to guard their back trail at the juncture of the Dragoons and the desert. They were all dead, tied to their horses with sticks and rope, butchered as all the others had been.
Stop here. I do not want the others to see this, for it will cause them to lose faith.
Chakotay's face was twisted, as if she had tasted something bitter.
What shall we do with them? They deserve a ceremonial burial, for they died honorably in battle with our enemies.
Cut their ropes and leave the bodies here in the arroyo. Bring the ponies. We must be on our way before the Bluecoats find our trail and follow us here. We cannot afford to be caught on the open desert.
But Naiche, they deserve...
Enough! We will honor our fallen by singing songs of their bravery around our campfires once we are safe in the Pedregosas. Until then, we must keep on the move.
Chakotay nodded, her lips a thin white line. She knew she must not say anything else. She glanced at the 3 dead warriors whose mothers and sisters would be singing a death song tonight. She made a silent vow to kill the White Eyes who did this or lose her own life trying. After the ponies were emptied of their burdens, Naiche led the war party back to the main body of his tribe. He reined his horse to a halt in front of his people, who were waiting for him to tell him what to do.
Issa, choose 4 men. Stay here and wait for the 3 White Eyes who follow us. Hide yourselves well, and be brave in battle. Kill them, and then rejoin our tribe.
Soon Naiche rode off, leading his people toward the Pedregosas. Once there, they could make their way toward Mexico and join up with Geronimo and his warriors to form an unstoppable force that would drive the white man from their land forever. As Falcon rode through moonlight across the desert, he talked to Diablo in a low, soothing tone. It was something he'd done for years. He found expressing his thoughts out loud served several purposes. The tone of his voice reassured Diablo that all was well, and in addition, speaking his innermost thoughts out loud allowed his more critical and logical conscious mind to pick them apart and find any obvious weaknesses or inconsistencies that might otherwise go unnoticed. The process had served him so well over the years that he did it now without thinking, automatically.
Naiche must have found those 3 dead guards I sent on ahead by now. So he knows even better that someone dangerous is on his trail. Hopefully, that'll spur him to push his people hard, to make them travel around the clock without getting any rest. Tired warriors don't make good fighters, so the more he pushes them, the better for me. And for the army, if Hawk and Jasper ever manage to meet up with them. And if they recognize the fires I set as a signal.
Without slowing Diablo, he reached back into his saddlebag and pulled out the tin of boot black and applied some more to his face. Earlier, he had taken the precaution of wrapping burlap around Diablo's hooves to muffle any sound the stud might make as they traversed the desert. He knew Naiche was sure to have posted more guards after finding his last 3 hadn't survived their assignment. Falcon was both hampered and helped by the desert terrain. On the one hand, there were precious few places any ambushers could hide. But on the other hand, it was going to be almost impossible for him to arrive unnoticed across the miles of flatland. The sound came from up ahead, carried on the evening breeze. At first, it was so low, Falcon thought it was merely the cry of a distant night bird.
Oh, God, please take me.
Damn, Diablo. That sounds like Cal Franklin up ahead. If the Indians got him and staked him out, that means they've got someone waiting to see if I take the bait.
Falcon slipped out of the saddle, leaving Diablo ground-reined next to a mesquite bush. He took his shotgun rather than his Winchester with him, for he knew there would be no aiming in the darkness, and he wanted something with a wide spread to it. Crouching to keep from outlining himself against the starlit horizon, he shuffled his feet to minimize sound and moved as silently as a wraith. As he walked, he loosened the rawhide hammer thong on his pistols and rearranged the scabbard of his Arkansas toothpick so it was within easy reach. Every few feet, Falcon stopped dead still and held his breath, searching the darkness ahead for any sign of human presence. He knew that no man, not even an experienced Apache warrior, could sit for hours in dark waiting an ambush and not make some kind of noise, no matter how slight. Falcon heard the sound from off to his right. The brave waiting there for him was coming down with a cold. He shifted his direction slightly and crept forward, his Arkansas toothpick in his right hand and his shotgun in his left. Glancing upward, Falcon saw a large cloud moving slowly across the sky with all the majesty of a clipper ship sailing calm seas. The trailing edge of the cloud was almost to the moon, and in another few moments would pass it, leaving a brief period of moonlight shining down. Falcon froze, staring ahead, waiting for the light. When it came, he could clearly see the outline of a man sitting 15 feet ahead of him on the ground with his legs crossed in front of him and a rifle resting on his thighs. The man's head was nodding, leaning forward only to be jerked back upright as he caught himself dozing and tried to force himself to stay awake. Naiche had been pushing his people too hard. Warriors falling asleep while waiting in ambush was a sure sign they hadn't had much rest lately. As the next cloud covered the moon, Falcon laid his shotgun on the ground and eased forward an inch at a time. As soon as he was in position, he clasped his left hand over the warrior's mouth and quickly slid the blade of his knife across his throat. Falcon lowered the brave to the ground gently so as not to make any noise. Figuring the other bushwhackers were arranged in a circle around the dying man, Falcon picked up his shotgun and began to move laterally around the area the sobs were coming from. He was in no hurry, and he moved slowly, knowing time was on his side. As tired as these warriors were, the closer to dawn it became, the harder it would be for them to keep their attention at peak levels. The next two kills went without a hitch, the men dying as silently as they had sat while waiting to kill Falcon. But the fourth warrior turned just as Falcon grabbed his throat, trying to bring his Winchester up to fire. They wrestled in the dark for a few seconds, until finally Falcon managed to slip the point of the toothpick under his ribcage and angle it up to pierce his heart. A dying spasm caused the brave's trigger finger to contract on the Winchester, and it fired, belching a foot-long flame out into the night, temporarily blinding Falcon. The last of the sentries jumped to his feet, and in his excitement began to fire repeatedly at the place where he saw and heard the rifle shot. Bullets were pocking the desert sand all around Falcon as he rolled over toward his shotgun. He grabbed the greener and eared back to hammers, pointing twin barrels toward the sound of rifle fire. The buckshot peppered the Indian, nearly tearing him in two. He was dead as he hit the ground. Falcon knelt next to Cal Franklin. He slipped the toothpick under the rawhide thongs holding Franklin's wrist outstretched and cut him one by one, releasing the terrible tension on his arms. Cal turned his head toward Falcon, exposing staring, sightless eyes covered with ants.
Who's there? Who is it?
It's Falcon Cow.
Oh, God! Oh, thank you, God! Kill me, Falcon. If you got any mercy in your soul at all, kill me now!
Falcon glanced down and saw that Cal's intestines were spread all around him. The man had no chance at all of survival, but he might live for days in total agony. Falcon drew his Colt and laid the barrel against Cal's temple. With his free hand, he stroked Cal's cheek.
Cal, you rest easy now, you hear?
Falcon!
Falcon sat back on his haunches, waiting to regain enough energy to go out into the darkness and fetch Diablo. He thought maybe he'd rest there the rest of the night and wait for the dawn to see if the army was on its way. He had no stomach to travel any further. He'd had enough killing to last him a while, and he really needed rest. He didn't want to make the same mistake Naiche was making and push himself so hard he became ineffective. After a while, he got to his feet and went to find Diablo. On the way, reined to an acacia cactus, he found the 5 ponies belonging to the warriors left behind to kill him. Once back at the area where the dead Indians lay, he took out his Arkansas toothpick and walked to each body. Taking the scalp locks to where the horses were tied, he affixed a scalp lock in each of the ponies' manes, leaving the bloody trophies hanging along their necks. After he was done with the grisly task, he cut their reins. The gunshot sent him galloping off toward the distant mountains where Naiche was headed. Falcon hoped they would send yet another message to Naiche, but his days were numbered. The next morning, Falcon woke up just before dawn. The air was frigid, and the sky was full of ominous-looking clouds that bespoke of possible snow later in the day. Falcon thought the desert must have been the last place God made, for it was filled with contradictions. Blazing hot and dry most of the year, it could turn freezing and have snow and ice at other times. He had seen the temperatures in the day break 100 and then fall to below freezing in the same 24 hours. He had pulled on his fur-lined jacket and set about making breakfast. While the fire was starting and his coffee was heating, he used the time to bury Cal Franklin's body. With no wood available for a cross, he gathered a number of fist-sized stones and piled them over the grave to help keep scavengers from digging the remains up. He didn't bother with the Indians' corpses, figuring coyotes and buzzards had to eat too, same as worms. Now he sat next to the fire, enjoying for the first time in several days a period of relaxation where he could drink a good cup of coffee. He had no supplies for a meal, so he chewed on some dried beef jerky and a few old biscuits that were hard as rocks.
No wonder punchers call biscuits sinkers. They're just sinking to the bottom of my stomach and sitting there like rocks.
As the morning sun rose, he spied a dust cloud off to the north, coming from the direction he had traveled the night before.
I hope that's Hawk and Jasper with the army. If not, I can't afford to wait much longer. We've got to catch up with Naiche before he crosses the Rio Bravo into Mexico, or the army will be powerless to go after him.
He emptied the rest from his coffee pot into his cup and brewed a fresh pot, figuring the men coming would be needing some after their journey across the desert. Less than 30 minutes later, the cavalry arrived, led by Hawk, Jasper Meeks, and a gnome-like man with flaming red hair and a face only a mother could love. The captain in charge tipped his head at Falcon.
I'm Captain Buford Jones, Mr. McAllister. Your associates here tell me you've been tracking Naiche and his band of renegades.
Falcon nodded, wondering why the red-headed gent kept staring at him so intently. Mickey Free jumped off his horse and walked over to Falcon.
You mean Falcon McAllister, son of Jamie McAllister?
That's right.
Free stuck out his hand.
I'm Mickey Free. Your pappy saved my skin once and helped me out on some other matters a time or two.
Falcon took Mickey's hand and shook it. As they shook hands, Mickey's eyes glanced over Falcon's shoulder and he saw the five Indian corpses lined up a short distance away. He looked at Falcon and cocked an eyebrow.
I see you've been busy, Falcon.
Mickey brushed by him to get a closer look at the dead braves. Jones, Hawk, and Meeks dismounted.
Sergeant, allow the men to break for a meal.
As they walked to stand over the bodies, Jones' eyes widened and he stared at Falcon.
Scalped? Mr. McAllister, were these men killed by Indians?
No, Captain. I did that myself, both the killing and the scalping. I tied the scalp locks to their ponies and sent them on ahead to deliver a message for me to Naiche.
White men do not scalp their victims, Mr. McAllister.
Kind of depends on the man, Captain, don't it?
Free's gaze flicked to the pile of stones nearby.
Who's the gent in the ground, Falcon?
Friend of ours. Name of Franklin.
You mean old Cal done got killed by the Indians?
Yeah, and he died hard. They worked on him a spell before I was able to end it for him.
You killed your own friend in cold blood?
I told you, Captain, he died hard. His eyelids were cut off and his belly was opened up with his guts spread out on the ground all around him. Wasn't any way he was going to make it. So I did what he asked and helped him to some peace.
I cannot believe...
Believe it, Captain. If it ever happens to you, you'll be begging for a blue pill just like Franklin did. And you better hope there's somebody around to feed you one when you need it.
There might be worse ways to die, but offhand, I can't think of one.
Me either.
All right, gentlemen. Point taken.
Would you men like some coffee?
Only if it's strong enough to float a horseshoe.
Oh, it'll float a horseshoe. But not the biscuits.
Within a few minutes, they were all standing around Falcon's fire, warming their hands and drinking coffee.
Falcon, you and Hawk and Meeks have had several run-ins with Naiche and his men, and you've managed to come out on top every time. Evidently, you have some feel for how to deal with these Apaches. What do you suggest we do next?
Falcon could hardly believe his ears. He'd never once before met an army officer who didn't think he knew it all, and had certainly never had one ask him for advice. Of course, he knew nothing of Jones's previous encounters with Naiche's men that ended in Jones's terrible defeats.
Well, Captain, the one thing I do know is that you'll never defeat the Apache in a running battle or on horseback. Apaches, unlike most other Indians other than Comanche, have no backup in them. And they won't stop fighting until the last man is dead. They don't have any word in their language for tomorrow, so all they live for is here and now, unlike us whites who seem to think we're going to live forever. Thinking like that gives them an advantage in battle, because they're not worried about surviving like we are. They're only worried about dying with honor. I think the best thing would be for me to try and flank Naiche and his group, and come at him from the front. When they turn to try and avoid me, you and your men will be behind him waiting.
And just what makes you think Naiche, with all those warriors, will turn and run from just one man?
I've gone to some trouble to make him fear me. So far, every war party he sent out after my friends and me has come back to him dead. That'll be enough for him to take the easy way out and try and go around me if he can.
I'll ride along with him, Captain, just to make sure things go the way he figures they will.
I reckon Hawk and I'll do the same.
No, Jasper. I need you and Hawk to stay with the Captain here. Show him how we arranged our ambushes of the war parties.
I don't need nobody to show me how to fight, Falcon.
I know you don't, Captain, for the normal sort of fighting the Army does. I'm quite sure you're excellent at leading your men into cavalry charges. But this is Indian fighting. That's something else altogether. And you won't find any better teachers than Hawk and Jasper.
All right.
After Jones pulled out his map and Falcon showed him the area they were assuming Naiche would be in, Falcon took Hawk and Jasper aside.
I'm counting on you men to keep Jones out of trouble.
He's green as a 2-foot-high willow tree, Falcon. What the hell's the Army thinking sending a man like that out to fight Indians?
They don't have much choice, Hawk. Because men like you and Jasper are too smart to join the Army and fight Indians for a living.
I reckon that's true, Falcon. Men like us that know which end of the porcupine to pet don't exactly cotton to taking orders from some stuffed shirt from Washington. We'll try to keep Jones and his men alive until you flush Naiche our way. After that, it's every man for himself.
Fair enough.
Falcon stuck out his hand.
In case for some reason I don't see you gents again, it's been a pleasure riding with you.
The three men shook hands. Falcon climbed on Diablo, and he and Mickey Free headed south-southeast to flank Naiche, while Hawk and Jasper waited to lead the army troops south-southwest to come at him from behind. The Pedregosas lay in a long, uneven line, reaching southward to Agua Prieta across the border in Mexico. It was a mystery to Naiche and many Apaches how an imaginary line stopped the blue coat soldiers from chasing them beyond a simple fence. It seemed senseless to a people who moved from place to place wherever they chose to go, fearing nothing but an enemy who might block their pathway to better hunting grounds by putting up a fight. But the White Eyes had many strange customs, like fences, which Naiche's people didn't even understand. It wouldn't keep them from taking advantage of it, the most important one of all, the fence, now that they were on the run from soldiers and the three men who had an uncanny ability to track down and kill Apaches the way another Indian might. After the skirmish with the three white men, when they set their fire in the desert brush, Naiche found he had fewer than 15 able-bodied fighting men left. If Mickey Free led the soldiers to him now, it would be a short fight, unless Naiche could take his people to a fortified place higher in the mountains, where rocks, scattered trees, and narrow trails would give them the advantage of cover. He recalled the carnage done to his three rear scouts early today. Their scalps missing, bellies cut open, and their eyes poked out as if someone had done it with a sharp-pointed stick. A sure sign the men following them understood Apache customs and ways. Nana, a veteran of many battles, was worried too. Joe was preoccupied with watching their back trail, while Jacoli had said nothing since leaving the white prison. A curious silence gripped the women and younger warriors as they made their way higher into the Pedregosas. There were no more war chants, no celebrations of their freedom as there had been before. Everyone was waiting to see if the five warriors Naiche left behind to ambush the three whites were going to be successful when the white Apache hunters were drawn to the shrill cries of pain from the prisoner Chicole gutted. It was a gamble that these cautious white men would ride up to the man staked across the bed of red ants, but Naiche felt it was a risk worth taking. His warriors were well hidden near the Acatia Grove, armed with repeating rifles, their horses tethered over a mile away in a second stand of Acatia. If the White Eyes even came close to investigate the dying man's screams, they would make perfect targets for the Apaches' Winchesters in open desert surrounding the sand pit. Off to the north, blanketing the desert flats they'd crossed to reach the mountains, a veil of smoke hung like a dark pall over the land. Naiche knew what the smoke meant. It was a way to draw the soldiers to their trail, a telltale sign of their passing and the direction they were taking. No doubt the fire was set by the three white men hounding their trail, seeking help from the bluecoats led by Mickey Free. Nana rode over after a long look at the smoke-filled desert behind them.
It is a signal to the bluecoats.
Mickey Free does not need smoke to tell them where we are and where we are going. He reads our tracks, and he knows we are headed for the mountains to make our escape to Mexico.
He may try to convince the soldiers to cut us off, to get in front of us. We will be caught between the bluecoats and the three white men. Only I do not believe they are whites. Not after what they did to Delgada and Poista and his brother. These white eyes kill like Apaches, marking their victims. Like the smoke covering the desert behind us. The way Delgada and Poista and Sonsi were blinded is a message, telling us what they plan to do to us if they are able to find us.
We fear no enemy on the face of Earth, Mother. Only the Comanches are our equals in combat. These men are not Comanches. The prisoner Chicole left to die said one was from the north country where it snows.
Perhaps they are Utes.
They are white eyes who have lived among some of the north tribes, like Mickey Free. They have learned our ways. We must expect them to think and act like Apaches.
There were times when Naiche himself had begun to wonder if they were human, or if they could be spirit warriors from the land of shadows, for they seemed invincible at times. This was a thought he wouldn't share with the others, for it would instill fear in them. Spirit warriors were the ghosts of dead Indians, according to Apache legend, and Naiche had never seen one. Most of his life, he had believed they did not truly exist except in the minds of the old ones. Nana looked down at his wrinkled, battle-scarred hands for a moment.
They have killed half our number, and yet they keep coming. We must try to find a way to stop them if the ambush at the Ocotillos fails.
Daiche had been considering it. Another trap of some kind to stop or delay the three white eyes if the ambush at the sandpit somehow went wrong. But very few among his warriors were clever enough to engage an experienced enemy like the men who followed him now.
It might be best for us to send the others onward to join Geronimo, while we pick a place and a time to halt them.
You and I and Ju are the most experienced when it comes to fighting a dangerous enemy.
Chakotay is wise in the ways of war. The four of us could kill them easily if we choose the time and place.
Chakotay is brave.
Send for her, and bring Ja. The smoke gives us away to the Bluecoats and Mickey Free. We must not allow them to catch us, or let this happen again.
I will bring the others. Ja and Chakotay will know what we must do if the trap at the sandpit fails.
Aiche gave the sign of agreement, still watching the smoky desert floor behind them for any signs that columns of soldiers were moving toward him. Nana rode away to bring back Judd and Chakotay, while Naiche considered a plan. The three whites were proven to be more troublesome than the Bluecoats or Mickey Free. If they could be stopped, Naiche was sure they could make it through the Pedregosas to Mexico. There was still a chance the ambush might work, but he'd been listening closely all day for the echo of rifle fire, and he'd heard nothing. Perhaps the distance was too great now. Chakotay came riding toward Naiche, her face a mass of worry lines. She halted her pinto in front of him.
Nana says we will go after the three whites. This will not be easy, Chief Naiche. We should wait to see if Issa and Nedne and the others kill them. Or do you have another plan of attack that will be certain to take them off our trail?
The lessons I learned from Geronimo will work. Three or four of us will dig shallow pits in the desert sand. We will hide with our rifles under the flat leaves of the agave plant and lie in wait. They will follow our tracks as they have since they came into the Dragoon Mountains. We hide in the small pits we dig, covered with brush, and then we wait for them to ride close.
This will be dangerous.
Yes, but they know too many of the Apache ways of war, and they are killing us off a few at a time. We wait in the holes until they are very close, and then we kill them when our rifles will not miss. The way Geronimo killed the Mexican soldiers. With an old Spencer rifle, he was able to kill 20 Mexican soldados.
We only need to kill these three white eyes, and the most important one is the big man who rides the black horse named McAllister. He is the one who must die soon, or he will lead the Bluecoats to us.
Yes. This Falcon McAllister must be the first white man to die.
Nana rode up with Ja, and they halted their horses in a half-circle around Naiche.
Tell us what you want us to do. Nana says we will go back to kill these three white eyes. There have been no gunshots from Issa and his warriors. Either the white eyes knew it was a trap and rode around it, or they may be waiting for the soldiers to join them.
Naiche watched his people moving up a steep mountain trail into the Pedregosas. He kept his eyes on them to make sure the pack animals made it over the next rise.
Come with me. I will show you how we will kill them. Send someone to the front to tell the women to keep moving. Tell them not to wait for us. The border into Mexico is only a few hours away, and there, they will be safe.
Wait!
Chakotay pointed north into the worst of the smoke.
5 horses come. It will be Issa to tell us the white men are dead.
Naiche and Juz stared at the 5 darker shapes of horses moving through the curtain of smoke, for they were hard to see so far away. But when Naiche got a closer look at the horses, anger began to well inside him.
The horses have no riders. Issa and the others have been killed. The white men send back the horses as a message to us. Our warriors are dead.
But we heard no guns.
There are other ways to kill.
Naiche's anger slowly changed to a touch of fear. Who were these white demons who killed Apaches without shooting a gun or making a sound? He had tried everything to halt them, and still they kept coming after him and his people. Were the three white men spirit warriors from another tribe?
It is not possible. Issa picked 4 of our most trusted fighters.
It is said spirit warriors can kill with a look. They do not need weapons.
Nana's eyes were downcast, as if he were afraid to look at the horses coming toward him, lest some magic take his soul, too.
They were young and lacked battle experience. The years in prison at Fort Thomas made some of our young men careless. There was no chance to give them proper training as warriors.
Chakorle speaks truth, Chief Naiche. There are only a few of us who were given a warrior's difficult training.
The five horses came toward him, drawn to the scent trail of the other horses climbing into the peaks, carrying the Apaches' food supplies and guns. Naiche watched the geldings approach, wondering how the three whites could have known about the ambush awaiting them.
These white eyes are far too clever for our younger warriors. The four of us remember what it was like to make war against the mighty Comanches and the Arapaho and the Kiowas. We can kill these white men ourselves. Just give us the word.
Naiche was torn by indecision. To keep on running toward Mexico, or stand and fight these white-skinned fiends, unless a bullet couldn't kill them. More and more, he was beginning to believe these men might be spirits without flesh or blood. He could find no other explanation for every attempt they made to escape.
Look at their manes!
Five bloody scalp locks were hanging from the horses' manes. Nana glanced at the others, his eyes wide with fear.
I swear to whatever spirits are listening, I will kill these men for what they have done to my brothers.
Naiche nodded, but his eyes betrayed his doubts as he looked out over the smoke-covered desert and wondered just who or what was coming to meet him.